Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review. Stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And we are going to be reviewing a book by Alistair Reynolds, which probably doesn't come as much as a surprise to many people, considering he is one of my favourite authors and one of the most reviewed people here on the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. Let me actually just sort it out here. Yeah, so far, I have reviewed on episode number 5, so right back in the start, Diamond Dogs, Turquoise Days, then The Prefect, Century Rain, which is rubbish, Revelation Space, House of Suns, Terminal World, Blue Remote Earth, Chasm City, Pushing Ice, The Prefect again, this time with Juliana listening along with me, On the Steel Breeze, and last year we reviewed Slow Bullets.
We did.
And yes, so this is a book which we actually began, if you remember, three New Year's ago. Yeah, anyway, we listened to The Martian together, wasn't it? And we were
right.
Like, that's really good. We really enjoyed listening to The Martian.
Yes.
And it was over
in
New
the car
Year's.
And yeah. on a holiday.
And it was the perfect length for a trip across Germany, because it was like a 7-hour audiobook and we had a 6-hour car journey, so we got most of the way through it, didn't we?
Yeah, we came from the Netherlands, I think.
Yeah. Oh no, we listened to a bit on the way to the Netherlands and then a bit and then on the way back, and then we had like half an hour left and we thought, well, let's finish it off when we get home. So that was a really good length for driving across Germany twice.
Yes.
From Berlin to the Netherlands and back again. 7-hour audio, but great, because you can pause it and you still have enough time to do it. And then we're like, hey, let's get another book. We also really enjoyed listening to The Prefect together.
We did.
And that was really good fun. So let's go more Alistair Reynolds. Let's continue on. We'd done The Prefect together. You'd also read Revelation Space. Or did you listen to the audiobook of Revelation Space?
No. I read it as a book. And this was actually, I think, one of my first science fiction books that I read. After what? I met you.
Oh, yeah, because I was like, hey, do this one. And but you got through that. You enjoyed it, didn't you?
Yes,
yeah,
I
but,
did.
Unlike some of the other science fiction books that I said, which were a bit too complex, I can't remember exactly what some of them were. But
yeah, no, this one was really, it was good. It was nice to read. It was a good flowy book. And I had fun. I had fun with the characters. And I really, really enjoyed the way that the characters, that he developed the characters,
yeah.
They were with edges and stuff. And so,
yeah, we might have mild spoilers for Revelation Space, the first novel, in this, but not too much. We'll try and avoid all of that kind of stuff. But yeah. So don't worry too much about spoilers. What we do have though, so that was 2 New Years ago. Then three New Years ago. And then like at the beginning of 2015,
right.
Like, actually, end of 2014, beginning of 2015, we were driving down to where was it? Vienna or something like that? Anyway,
Austria.
So we're like, hey, let's get another audiobook. And so we picked out the follow-up to Revelation Space, which is, of course, this book, Redemption Arc, which you will know if you've looked at the title of the podcast, and which is the second book in the Revelation Space series, even though The Prefect comes before that. Diamond Dogs, Turquoise Days is in the mix there as well. And there's some other short stories and other short story collections there as well in Galactic North, which we should get onto at some point.
Okay.
And so we started it then. And then when we do a long journey, we're like, hey, let's keep listening to this. And I guess we just went on fewer long journeys. And then last year we were like, oh, let's go to the EJC, which was in north of Italy. But then we had people in the car with us.
Yeah, so it wasn't that easy.
So it wasn't so easy.
And also in comparison to the one that we, like The Martian, or let's say The Prefect is even shorter, I think, as well.
I don't know.
This one is 27 hours audiobook.
Yeah, 27-hour audiobook is too long of an audiobook to go, right, when we drive somewhere, we'll do it. Because often when we drive over to Juliana's parents' place, and they live like 35 minutes, 40
yeah.
minutes away, not really enough to get into an audiobook and to get a big chunk of it done. So we were still only like half of the way through, literally like a year and 2 months later, we were just over halfway through, weren't we?
I see here that I put it down on my Goodreads to start reading on the 1st of March 2015.
Yeah, okay, but I think it was before then we actually started listening to it, maybe. But anyway,
maybe,
so,
but
let's just say it took
really
us a year
long
to get through this,
yes,
book. And in the end, I was just like, hey, on my trip away, I did a 5-week trip away, and I was like, I'm going to have it there. And I downloaded it via some weird way of getting into Juliana's Audible account.
Cause
you
can't, it's so painful.
You can't just give books to people on Audible or
No, that's not the point. The point is that my Audible account is on the German account, and yours is on UK, I don't know.
No, it's just the international, it's like the American
the
one
dot
or
.com. Yeah. And so you can't give credits between the two.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to download the audiobook and then kind of get the file and give you the file, and it's just so complicated.
So in the time that we started this book, we actually read another Alistair Reynolds book, which was a Slow Bullets book, which was actually just it was kind of like a novella. It was much shorter than this.
Yes.
And he's released another book, which normally I would just, you know, get it and listen to it, or not listen to the audiobook. It's like the conclusion of the Poseidon's Children series.
Yeah.
Like Blue Remembered Earth, the next one in that one. And I didn't get around to that either, just because, well, I'm just getting through this, you know, his back catalogue very, very slowly. But in the end, I was like, well, I'm going to listen to it, and you listen to it, and we did. And then, last week, we caught up to around about the same place, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And then we listened a little bit on a half an hour car journey, like, last week. And then I was like, I'm just going to have to continue on, because it was really to the climax of the story. And then over the last few days, I'm just like, you just got to finish it, because I'm going away for a work trip and then to another juggling festival.
Yeah, you finished it a lot, like a week before me or so. Yeah. Yes.
Well, only about 4 or 5 days. But anyway, we both now have got it finished up, which... it's a long way to say that if we're not entirely clear about everything that happens at the start of the book, it's because it was over a year ago that we started listening to this audiobook. However, it is, I think, a credit to this book that even though we started listening to it, and sometimes 2 or 3 months would go by between listening to the next part of the story again, before we're just like, oh, let's just listen to it in our own times individually.
Yeah.
It never took us more than like 30 seconds to remember what the story was and who we were with and what had happened up to that point.
Yes.
And I think that is just shows how strong the story was. Unlike a lot of books where if you go away and you come back a month later and start reading it, you're like, oh, who was this person again? Like, where were they going?
This happens actually quite often, that I start a book and then I get like in the first chapter or even two and then don't read it. And then I really have to start from the beginning. And then, of course, while reading, it comes back to me. But in this one, it really just came like the story. We were just back in the story again.
Yeah.
Every time we just pressed play again.
Yeah, there was at one point where we did go back a bit, because we were like, they were around a planet and they were like coming in and there's this big structure. And they're like, what? Okay, how far? Like, how close are they? You know, and stuff like that. And we'd rewind a bit. It's like, oh, yeah, we definitely have this bit before.
Yeah.
But even some books which I've read or listened to... as an audiobook, sometimes, like, even as it's going along, all I'll do is just lose concentration for a second, and I won't even remember the character's... well, not the character's name, because I'm not always good with names, but, like, what... it's like, okay, what was it? Where is this person going? Like, what did they want? You know, Game of Thrones was a bit like that for me. Like, I'd suddenly go, oh, they were going... okay, they're coming... they were going towards this castle, but now they've done something there. Now they're just coming back to the place that they were before. Like, why did they... and I could never remember, like, why somebody wanted to go somewhere. It's like, oh, and they had a conversation with someone, or met someone, or met up with this thing there. And there's a few things about that book which I do remember clearly. But, like, overall, why people were in places and wanting to go to other places and what they did when they go there, I just don't remember any of it. And I read the book and I watched the TV series, and I'm still not entirely sure why people were going to places and the relations that the different parts of the story had to each other. Of course, that's not a complete story. It's just, you know, one chapter.
Yeah.
I mean, the first book is one chapter in a much bigger story,
which
isn't completed yet. So maybe not all the connections are teased out in that first time. But, like, there's so many other books like that as well, which...
for example, what I can always say, it's like when you read, like, the big Russian classics, like War and Peace or similar books, like, you really have to read, like, it's chunky books. But, like, if you know you have, like, a 2-week holiday, you know you're going to have to read it in one go. Because if you stop in the middle,
yep.
you and you continue at some point again, you have no ideas who's Alexandrovich, Ilyanovich.
Which one of the Alexanders is which?
Yeah, and they all have double names, and then the names are so similar. And you
think, they have titles. So they all have names and titles. I read half of War and Peace.
Yeah.
And it must have been in about 98 or 99 or something. And I got about halfway through it, and it was, you know, it was more of a, you know, a historical curiosity than a story that I was really wanting to read. And then we got internet access at home.
Okay.
In my parents' place.
And you just read the the conclusion or...
No, I didn't. I just stopped because then when I was at home and I was wanting to do some stuff, like I was reading other books at the same time, and those books I continued on with those other books because they were short and I could finish them up. But yeah, then I had internet access and I'm like, War and Peace or the internet in 1998, which, you know, isn't as amazing as the internet now, and it wasn't as much stuff there, but like suddenly I was like, oh, I can go over this discussion for, you know, all these things that I used to only do at university.
Yeah.
I then had unlimited access to at home. So I never did complete War and Peace. I'm not saying that this book is as big as War and Peace. I'm just saying it is impressive that after months of being away, just pick up the story straight away. It was always clear, this character wants to get to here. And even though the motivations changed all the times, and the sides of the battle, which characters were on and who is fighting against who, it would, you know, it would change here and go back that way and change this way and go back that way. But it was always clear, like, because Alistair Reynolds always... It's like he overwrites the characters. He actually is a bit too repetitive in some ways. But that repetitiveness is really handy if you're reading a book like spread over a long time that he's like, oh, and this is what they are doing and this is what they are doing. Like sometimes when I'm reading a book and it's just going through, I'm like, I'm just thinking, right, I've got it. I understand what the characters are doing. But that clarity shows that the story really works.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like this is a really... interesting and well-plotted story and well-paced story.
And the people in it are important for the story.
Yes.
You know, like, this is why he makes the outline of the characters really crisp, so you really know, okay, this is the kind of person. How would that person react in that situation? What's it gonna do?
Yes, in any one of these situations, there is only one character who could do this job.
Yes.
Who could fulfill this role in this story. And even though some of the conjoiners and stuff like that. Sometimes I was like, okay, which one was Rementoir again? You know, there's some of those like minor characters in like, okay, there's this faction here, and on the edge of that faction, there are some characters which they were mentioned in the previous book, and now they've been mentioned in this book. Whatever, it's not too.
But also,
difficult.
I think there are not too many characters. Like,
no.
There's a certain like a handful. I took the notes at the end, so I remember
like seven
them.
Or eight names where you're like, okay,
and then they reoccur.
Story is about these seven people and how they interact. So should we go through some of these things?
Yeah, let's
this
do
is
it.
Part of the Revelation Space universe, and we talked about this on the podcast before. The Earth not really mentioned very much. I can't remember why people aren't on Earth anymore in the Revelation Space. I think something might have happened there. But whatever, most of the action takes place around a place called Yellowstone. And Yellowstone is it's the main setting of Revelation Space, and it's the place that they're going to in Chasm City. Oh, it's where Chasm City is in the book Chasm City.
Yes.
And in the prefect, there's the Glitter Band, which is this circle, like orbiting space stations around the Yellowstone.
Yes.
Is where all the action takes place there. Although the prefect happens hundreds of years before, between that time, there's the Melding Plague. So what the Melding Plague is this biological
virus,
slash technological alien virus, which gets into everything and fucks up technology. But some technology can get through if it's not too advanced and things. Anyway, so it's sort of this leveling kind of device where there's still amazing technology in the world. Or in the universe, there's amazing technology, but it's not all accessible to humans at all the time. You know, so you think, oh, well, if they've got faster than light travel, it must be really easy to do this and this and this. It's like, yeah, well, faster than light travel still works because that technology can still work with the Melding Plague, is there?
Yeah.
But these other technologies, which, you know, are equally miraculous, they just don't work anymore. Like the nanobots just don't work anymore in all situations. I mean, they can still work. So the Melding Plague fucks up small technology, but also it creates this kind of weird coral animal sponge. It's a weird
like a
thing.
Crust kind
yeah, it's like
of thing.
A crust, which yeah. and it can rearrange itself and kind of bend matter. And Chasm City, when you actually read about Chasm City in these books, post-Melding Plague, it's these fantastic gothic buildings and spires which have been infected with the plague, and that is all kind of twisting round and making it really weird and gothic and grungy and stuff. So all of that, that kind of Melding Plague really is the vibe, is the kind of it sets the tone for these books. Humanity is living under, it's sort of like post Black Plague, you know,
yeah.
and it's sort of like, oh, we're going to come through this and it's going to be great. Because that's why it's so different in the Prefect, because it's pre-Melding Plague and everything is like la 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 and everything's utopian and
yes.
well, not everything is utopian, but there's its images there as well. In the book Revelation Space, there's a spaceship called
Nostalgia for Infinity.
Nostalgia for Infinity. And the Melding Plague,
I really like that name.
It's a really good name, isn't it? And Nostalgia for Infinity is taken over by the Melding Plague. And in that book, there's a Captain John, I can't remember his full name.
It's always talking to the captain.
I think it's John Branigan or something. I don't know. Let me have a look at the Wikipedia page, which I have right open here. And he's not mentioned. Oh, no, maybe he is. Captain John Branigan. Hey, I remembered. There it is on the Characters in Redemption arc on Wikipedia. And Captain John Branigan has melded with the ship. So he has become at one with the ship. And so the ship is the captain and the captain is the ship. And even though the captain now has, now the ship has like a new captain or people who are nominally in charge of what the ship is doing, they have to kind of convince the ship to do what
or
they
the
want
captain.
To do. The captain of
and
the ship.
The captain, yeah.
So John Branigan has become, and this makes the ship, the Nostalgia for Infinity, probably one of my favorite spaceships in all science fiction. And I'd forgotten, I think when we did our top fives episode, when we were saying, oh, our top five spaceships or top five this, I'm not sure if top five spaceships was one of those. This,
I think you did mention it.
Did I? I'm not entirely sure. I could probably look up my research about that. But now that I've read this book again more recently, it should be there because it is just so, it's just such an amazing creation, an amazing fictional creation, let me put it that way, as that Alistair Reynolds has done here. It's just so well put together. Like, the ship has just got so much character in its own right.
Yeah, and what I also really like every time that these ships can transform themselves into, like, they can change their inner layout, what they look on the outside, and
they
like,
rebuild themselves. And stuff. But normally the ships can do that. The light hugger ships can do that, as they're called.
Yeah,
but this one. It can do it an extra because it's now also got the Melding Plague in it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's some
kind
of it's
like
being controlled.
Misshaped.
Yeah.
But also it's like so it has so much individuality in itself that it is an extra character.
And also it's very well drawn, as in like the physical shape of it. You kind of know what the shape of it is. It's like this, it's this big long cone with a pointy end at one end, which has got this block of ice to absorb interstellar impact, like when they're going between interstellar space, it can absorb it. And at the back is a big flat thing, and then it's got the two, like it's got like these spike, like these points sticking out either side, and then the engines are kind of outboard engines on either side. So it's like this, it's like a triangle with these like jet engines sticking out the sides, facing backwards. That's the kind of standard design of this. But then when he describes, and then people see it from the outside, and they're like, we shouldn't show anyone it from the outside because they might get a bit spooked out because it's a bit weird. It's a bit, there's these spires sticking out of it. And at one point, there's a character doing this long-range imaging of it, and he's saying, well, the long-range imaging software keeps trying to draw it with this really weird outline, but of course that's not how a spaceship could look. So I'll say, no, stop doing that. That's not what spaceships look like. You should look like more like this. And it's like, oh, I'm getting these other weird readings, these weird things, and it says it's got this weird... anyway, so...
It actually looks like weird.
It really is that weird. Anyway, so many years before... as we discovered in Revelation Space, there's these things called the Hell class weapons, and many years before the Conjoiners, which are kind of like a kind of a humane Borg kind of thing, which is a weird.
It's a machine.
Yeah, like put machines in your brain, and then you can control or you
and
can
also
communicate
like
brain
to
brain.
Your hive mind kind of thing.
Yeah, there's some kind of hive mind
It's called the Mother Nest.
Yeah, there's the Mother Nest and things like that. So they and among with some help from other technology built these weapons, which are so dangerous. So like, okay, so let's stop building these weapons. But they still existed. And then they were stolen, and then they were lost, and then they were lost again, and then stolen and lost again. Anyway, lost track of these 37, however many Hell-class weapons, which were just awesome destructive power. And they're on board Nostalgia for Infinity through a series of quirky heists and in previous stories. Anyway, so what we have is that at the end of Revelation Space, this some characters on the Nostalgia for Infinity arrive on a planet called Resurgium.
Yes.
And then back in Yellowstone, there's still the civil war going on between the Demarchus, which are the people who were like, oh no, we need to say, okay, this is what humans are. We have to keep baseline humans.
Yeah.
Humans are the most important thing. And then on the other side is the Conjoiners, who are like, no, we should just inject ourselves with the intelligent technology and all be floating in the cloud and stuff like that.
Elevate us.
Yes, and elevate us into this different stuff. So there's a war going on there as well. And so action happens there. And what I often like about these Alistair Reynolds is he uses space-time dilation and relativity and all of these, you know, sort of like slowing things down and the time between stars. So he'll start off with a story on one planet and then start off with a story in another planet. And you're just like, okay, these are two separate stories, but we know they're going to link up at some point. But we don't know how far in the future or past these are between each other. But we know that once relativity sorts itself out and they get from there to there, they'll arrive at the same time. We saw that before on Resurgium and in the previous books as well.
Yeah, and also what he does, he's having like these different storylines, and then it's kind of, it feels like he has he's making a jigsaw puzzle of them.
Yeah.
And then he takes just random bits, of course not random, but like he takes bits and then put them back together in a different order. So that you kind of, sometimes you don't really know, okay, this happened there, where is it?
Yes.
And then slowly it like kind of really is like you take then the bits of things in your head and put them in the right place.
But they might, the key thing is they might not be in the right place. It's like when you do jigsaw. So when you do a jigsaw and there's a face and you haven't looked at the box and there's a face here and then there's another thing there and you're doing it and you're like, oh, this goes here and this goes here. And you're like, wow, this doesn't work out. And then as you fill it in, you're like, oh, this person's standing on the head and that face is actually upside down. And then you twist it round and you're like, oh, okay.
And then now you kind of see, I kind of by accident just pressing the wrong things together.
And again, that's so clear. And so many times I've said this about Alistair Reynolds because I reviewed so many of his books. There is nothing wasted in any of his books. Sometimes he can be a little bit repetitively redundant. And so you just go, oh, why is he mentioning it? But he mentions some things a few too many times, or like twice when I've already got it the first time, and I'm like, why is he mentioning that again? But it does have functions in that way. But he never mentions anything. Nothing's ever mentioned which isn't used later.
No.
And it can just become that thing where you just go, ah, ha, ha, this is mentioned now, and that's going to come in there. And by the end of the book, you're like, and that place has been thing, and that Chekhov's gun has been fired, and this thing has been done. And it's so kind of neat in a way that it's almost a fault with the book, but then the story comes together so well, you're just like, well, I can't fault it because it's like everything is there.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, what I think it like you have this kind of like revelation, like in a certain point of the book.
Yeah.
I have it maybe even a little bit later, but still we get the same kind of outcome because we still enjoy it the same way. So you have different people who realize their things on different points of the book.
Oh, like different readers.
Yeah, different sorts of readers who realize, oh, this goes together with that and stuff.
Yeah.
But still, even though you most of the times get things a lot earlier than I do.
Well, I'd read this book before as well.
Yeah, but in general, like if we would consider that we both read it, you read it for the first time at some point, I read it for the first time now or listened to it. So you probably got things a lot earlier than I did. But still, it didn't feel like, oh, I just got it now. Now I'm feeling like the dumb reader or something.
Because it's so well put together. There's always... He always puts off long enough that things don't just come out of nowhere and you're going, oh shit, when did that happen? Like it's slowly revealing to it. It's like, and if something does go, oh shit, it's like you had half the jigsaw upside down. It's not like you didn't know what the picture was at all. You're like, oh, this thing connects in here and plugs in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very well done. So The setup is people want these. Oh, and also the other big thing is inhibitors. And I did.
Yeah, I was just about. There wasn't a third party.
Yeah, the big bad thing that's happening in the universe, which kind of kicks all this kind of stuff up. What happens at the end of Revelation Space is that they find this weird kind of singularity, technological singularity thing. Not quite sure what it was, but there's this thing orbiting like way outside of Resurgium. And actually, Revelation Space begins with them doing archaeology on Resurgium, going, hey, it looks like this previous alien intelligent civilization was kind of wiped out. But it was like all over the planet. What could wipe it out all over the planet? And the idea is it's the inhibitors, which is a kind of...
Or the wolves.
The wolf pack, or the wolves, yes. Which is this kind of ancient intelligence, which is not... that's good. An ancient intelligence which is getting rid of intelligent spacefaring civilizations.
Yeah.
So if it's not intelligent life, that's fine. And if it's not spacefaring life, that's also fine. If it's not expanding out. So this singularity kind of, this weird thing, this technological thing, which is a bit like in 2001, you get the thing on the moon, which is like, when humanity reaches the moon, they'll discover this thing, and that means they're interstellar. They're a spacefaring.
They left that planet.
They've left their planet, which means they are now ready to go to the next point. And then when they get to Jupiter, it's like, and now they managed to get to Jupiter, which now they're at the next point to get to the... And that's kind of what this thing was, is if someone gets to the edge of their solar system, which is kind of in interstellar space, and they find this, they're like, ooh, what's this? And they poke it, and then the inhibitors turn up and go, aha!
Now we got you.
That was the bait in the mousetrap. Anyway, that's what happens at the end of Revelation Space, mild spoilers, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, this is just what happened. And they go along and they poke it, and in this book, the inhibitors turn up, and they're like, hey, didn't we wipe something out on Resurgium like a million years ago, or like 10 million years ago? That was really recently. And now there's some other people back here, and then the inhibitors start pretty much taking apart the solar system, trying to, do all that
weird
stuff.
Taking everything over.
So... what we find out is that the people on Resurgium don't really know about this, but there's someone there going, oh, conspiracy theory. And that's actually a really fun part of the story.
Yeah.
But then cojoiners? They go, we're, instead of going to face up to these people, we've got this faster than light technology. Well, not faster than light. We've got this, inertia suppressant technology, and we're gonna head off really quickly away from the wolves, away from the inhibitors, and we're gonna be fine. We could really do with those weapons. Who's got those weapons? Oh, those weapons are really... Anyway, so there's this whole thing of okay, we need the weapons to knock out the
inhibitors. So they have to trace where the weapons are, which got lost and
but
stolen.
But they knew where they were
stuff.
Because one of them is used at the end of Revelation Space. Anyway, so... That's the whole setup. I think we pretty much kind of covered what it is. That's the different factions.
Yeah.
But the different characters. So let's just go over to you. Who is your favorite character? Who are some of your favorite characters in this book?
I think I still really like Ilya Volyova.
Ilya Volyova.
Yeah.
The Triumvirate.
Also because John Lee is giving her a really good accent. I don't know. It's kind of sounds like Russian kind of...
There's the different families which have kind of...
Yeah, I mean,
ancestry.
Her name really sounds Russian.
Yeah, but even the Sylvester family is all kind of French,
part of the characters are Remontoire, yes. Antoinette,
yes.
And maybe even Clavain.
Clavain, yes, there
Clavain.
Are some...
There's some nice language play stuff going on. But I don't know, who did I like most? I really find that Clavain is, of course, one of the most more interesting characters because of his complexity.
Yeah.
Of being an old butcher of something.
He was the butcher of Tharsis.
Or a station.
Oh, that reminds... No, the station was from the Leviathan Wakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Expanse series.
Yeah, it's just way too similar. But, yeah.
It's a total rip. As I was listening more to this, I was like, wow. What they've done with the Expanse novel is just read this book and just gone, oh, let's just take all of the stuff in this book and, like, write it in, like, fuck up the story and just like all of the different factors. I think we actually talked about that when we reviewed the Leviathan Wakes, the first Expanse novel. I can't remember the name of the author now. But yeah, it's sort of like there's
Corey, James.
Yeah, but
James,
it's like a fake
a
name.
Corey.
It's like it's a apparently that's people. on I think you can get that on
isn't it?
No, it's on Amazon Prime. We could actually probably watch the full series
maybe.
Of that. Maybe we get onto it. So with that one, there wasn't a plague, but there was like a zombie kind of melding plague.
Yeah, yeah.
It has, at the end of it, the asteroid zips off and they're like, how did that accelerate so quickly? It's like, they have inertial suppressant technology. Wasn't that the same thing? They have a similar kind of like, hey, space pirates going around, which is like Antoinette and those guys in this.
And the hyper pigs.
Can't remember the hyper pigs.
No, but like they act a bit like the pirates in
the main
space.
Character was called the Butcher of Sarah Station or something in that book, and here it was the Butcher Clavane is the Butcher of the Tharsis, and it wasn't just it's not just a few things, it's like time after time it's like wow they've just copied this book if you like the Expanse series and some of the stuff in that first book
and you want to find out where it comes from,
like if you want to read the source material, read this. I know that, and again, I totally understand that Alistair Reynolds with this book, he is doing his riff on space opera. Like this is probably one of his most space opera, space battle-y kind of books.
Yeah.
But he's doing it from such a great kind of like hard science fiction, like the rules are set that. Okay, let me get to one of my favorite. Skipping on from the characters a bit, let me get to one of my favorite sections of this book, which is the spaceship chase and spaceship battle, which is pretty much the second half of this book.
Yes,
Clavane sets off
from Conjorna. From the mother nest.
Oh no! Someone else sets off in front of him. Yeah, so
he sets off with people.
No, Skade sets off ahead in front of him, and then he sets off, and then he's being chased by other Conjorna ships because at that point he's not with the Conjoiners. He's kind of fighting against them, and it's a race to who can get to Resurgium first and get the hell to be able to claim the hell class weapons.
Yes,
that sequence is happening over the course of months and years.
Yes.
Or at least months, because they have the inertia suppressant stuff, don't they, there? So it takes... And they're trying to ramp up the technology and trying to do stuff even, like, more and, you know, really go through when they're all, like, 8Gs and they're everywhere, this kind of stuff. And then they're having a battle at the same time. So, how do you have a battle when you're going, like, just under the speed of light in interstellar space? And they're throwing things at each other and shooting things at each other and... But it works so well because it's the rules of the world and how the machines work. Of course, we don't really care about how the inertial suppressant drive works. We don't really care about how the lighthouse works. But the rules are set in space so much that everything that happens is important. Everything that is being thrown at each other, you kind of understand it all the time.
It's very strategical.
Very strategic, And then once that is over, then when that same ship arrives within Resurgium system and they're like, right, now we're going to have Zodiacal Light going up against Nostalgia for Infinity. Now we're going to have a space battle across the solar system there as well.
Yeah.
And there's a great passage when Clavane is going, you know, the most interesting and best kind of war arena is when it takes around about 4 hours for something to get from one side of the battlefield to the other side of the battlefield, and it goes back through some of the histories of you know, fake past histories in the book of when that's happened. Oh, this is, you know, when we went across Mars, that was good, and when we did those things across the asteroids, that was good. Oh, and the Battle of Britain was, you know, is interesting. It took about 4 hours to fly from, you know, air bases around London across to Berlin and back, or whatever, you know, and that kind of thing. Across the German airspace and British airspace, backwards and forwards. You know, it's like, that is an interesting thing, and some old naval battles. And, it's just really, like, it's all of what I like about, you know, these military science fiction books, which try and go, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to have, like, you know, the Honor Harrington books and those other ones, which is like, okay, let's just do Napoleonic Wars, you know, the but these... these battles which took place at sea, but then we're just going to transpose them and put them over into space.
Yeah.
But that isn't, I mean, that can be exciting, that kind of, you know, ship to ship. Like, if you've seen Master and Commander, the movie Master and Commander, at one point they're like, we can see the ship, it's all the way on the horizon, and it's, we can see them now, but the wind is the same, and our ships are about the same, so it's going to take us around about a week to catch up with them, and then we're going to have a battle. And it's that, and it kind of feels like that kind of thing, but it feels so much more natural in this book, because the world is designed from the ground up. And then the battle takes place on top of it, rather than them going, hey, we want a cool space battle. How can I design the rules of the universe to make this space battle interesting? But it doesn't, you know, that way around doesn't work. And I think that's when we read the Leviathan Wakes novel, the rules weren't clear enough. So then they were like, oh, and then they dodged this and went over there and flew around there. And then, 20 minutes later, they had half the hull left, and then they did this, and there was nothing to it. And this space battle, last chapter after chapter of them trying to do this thing and doing, you know, and sending signals back to each other, and then they're being chased as well. And
yeah,
it's
not
just...
only signals, but they're also sending beta level kind of things. Clavain is sending a copy of himself to negotiate.
But that's a weapon.
Right. It's just himself, and then he gets put into a robot a servitor.
Yeah.
And he's negotiating in person, kind of.
But not really. In person. So you can have the same character twice. Oh, that's what I really liked about the narration. Is it John Lee who does this?
Oh yeah,
it is. And so no, I was just trying to remember his name. So when they're in VR, Clavain's AI, beta level AI, has just his normal voice and it looks the same.
Yes.
But when he's embodied in a robot, he talks like this, but not, it's not really robotic, but it's
no, but it
when
is
he starts speaking
totally different.
When he starts speaking, you're just like, that's not him. And then
it's very British.
Yeah. Because he's got the default voice, just a little bit Clavainified, and then when he goes into VR, and then he suddenly becomes him again. It's very well. I mean, first of all, it's well written to be able to do that.
Yes.
But then the
performance is amazing.
Yeah. Then John Lee takes that, goes, okay, what would that be like in all the different accents that he's given the different characters that he can.
So many.
Yeah. Really good as well.
Yeah.
Another part which I actually really liked about this book is that we had a few times when people were boarding each other and going on these different things. Oh, of course, the part before where, the Corvette. He gets into a Corvette.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they have in Leviathan Wakes as well.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, we get in the Corvette. I'm like, you're even calling the... Of course, Corvette is a kind of...
It's kind of a ship.
It is a ship's class, but it's like, why did you... Like, after all of it, and then you just pick the same name.
Yeah.
So the stuff that he does in the Corvette of him dropping himself off and getting picked up and that kind of stuff. But what I really liked about it is when they actually go, right, we're going to have to steal a starship. We're going to get this pig army together with Scorpio and his guys that we've met earlier on.
Yeah.
Going to get together the pig army... And we're going to take over this thing. And they meet up with the guy down on the planet. And he's like, yeah, okay, I'll let you do this. You know, I'll let you go free and let you go off. And I'll even help you a little bit to do this. That's his little bit of redemption in the redemption arc theme of the book. And there's like, and then they went up. And they went up to capture it. And when they had, and then we're just going back. And I was like, what? So we're not going to read the whole bit where they capture the starship? No, it just goes, and then they're going to capture the starship. And when they had, he turned to and then the story continues. And I was like, "But that is such clever storytelling that we knew that everything was in place for them to capture that starship."
Yeah.
And we didn't need to read about how exactly they did it and who was there and who went this way.
No, there's so many other things going on that are more important than
us. But that's a pivotal moment in the story. And he just goes... And when it happened, and you're like, wow, you just cut, like you didn't even...
Yeah, but it's building tension and then not fulfilling the tension that how you want it, but like taking in a different way.
But the way that it does take it...
Puts you more to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just so... And that kind of storytelling is just so audacious that this one of the most important things that happen in the whole book...
Yeah,
it happened like off screen, like off the pages. So I'm like, all right, we did that, and now let's get onto the. And then you realize, oh, that was actually just a minor part of the book.
Yeah,
that happens halfway through. It's just like this pausing point, and then the whole second half of the book is that interstellar chase and the battle, and space battles at the end.
So Going back to the, you asked me about my favorite characters.
Yeah.
What I really like about this is that you actually have like three main combatants.
Yeah.
Like the three main war people. Yeah. Like who actually wants something and are really clever in pursuing their goals.
Okay, that is Clavain on one side.
Clavain.
Yeah.
And then
Skade.
Yeah. And who's the third? There's a third one who's equally
Ilya.
Yeah.
Ilya Valyev.
So you have these three, and they are approaching from like you can see them kind of approaching from the different directions.
It's so epic. The build up is so epic that they're all on their way to the same place, and that's like the whole first half of the book is putting these people in place.
Yeah.
And that whole second, well, it's not quite. It's actually probably a bit more than half of the book is setting it all up.
Yeah.
But for that last, you know,
but
third,
it takes quite some realization from the beginning to towards the end to see. Oh, okay. So it's setting up all these storylines in the different places.
But
and they
it's such
all,
a great collision course at the end.
Yeah, because they are all so really like equal in their abilities.
Or more than equal. Well,
Like
some of them have, like I'd say Clavain is probably the best soldier, but he doesn't have the Hellclass weapons.
Exactly.
You know?
So
and
everyone
has this other thing, but yeah, they all...
Yeah, it's good. I like it. And I think the what makes it so great then again is that you have at least Skade and Clavain who have this very precious, fragile little package, which is Falca.
Yeah.
And she kind of gets protected
by
these really hardcore war people.
Yeah.
And that kind of softens them off again.
Yeah.
And so you have Falca for Skade and Clavain, and on the other hand you have
Khoury.
Who softens
Ilya a bit.
Ilya.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really nice. You can see all the balancing stuff.
And then you have the smaller characters. I'd say smaller characters, but like even though they're kind of a bigger part of the story, like Antoinette and what's her boyfriend? What's the technician's name? Antoinette and let me quickly go across here.
And
Antoinette.
He's not on it.
Anyway, don't worry too much about that. But and also on the planet Thorn, who is the guy who is like, hey, there's something weird going on here, which is another point. So other things that I really like about I wouldn't say all of the characters are fantastic, but they all have like say such important roles in the story that you can't help but kind of be fascinated in what their story is and where they're going and how it's going to come together. Another thing that I really like in these stories is the idea of messing around with, even though it's kind of hard science fiction, you're like, oh, time travel can't really exist, but the idea of being able to like weirdly affect causality and get messages from the future, I really like that they're going, oh, there's something set up here. Where is it? Like, we're getting this information from the future somehow, but it's so nebulous that it's just these hints from the future.
Yeah.
And you're never quite sure if it is from the future, if it's from somewhere else, or if it's from one possible future, you know.
Yeah. I think this is... And I think in the end, this is the kind of bit that gets the most of a revelation, because we get to see where it comes from.
Yeah,
and
actually in the next book there's another thing which comes in even more, like there's the big machine, the big kind of alien thing in there is very interesting as well.
So I had this one exactly towards the end of the book when I made all my notes and stuff and I was thinking about it, and of course then just at the end of it, it gets kind of prominently mentioned. This other entity, which are the pattern jugglers.
The pattern jugglers, yeah.
How do you feel about what? Like I just find it really funny.
Well, I've read lots of the other books, so I know what I don't know what they are, but they're mentioned in a lot of other books.
Okay, but in this one, they're kind of just like a side thing, but it really gets clear how important they are. They create worlds and and they are really important. And I really like it that the name that
the pattern
they
jugglers.
Were given were the pattern jugglers.
Well, yeah, because when you swim with them, you imprint your pattern of your like mind brain pattern gets imprinted into their
and then they juggle it around
and then they mix it up and then they can imprint patterns back onto you. There's a few other stories where there's people swimming in the pattern jugglers, even though it only happens very 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 at the end of this book.
Yes,
in Diamond Dog's Turquoise Days. The Turquoise Days is all set on a pattern juggler. The next book in this, the Absolution Gap, half of it's set on a pattern juggler world.
Oh, okay.
One of the storyline, there's like two main storylines, and one of them is set on pattern juggler world.
Yeah.
It starts where this one ends, you know, with the characters on that.
Well,
one,
so. if it continues, like, it isn't Revelation Space, it's like an ongoing thing.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of picks up 20 years later, or however many years later, starts up again. Yeah. The other thing that I like about it's not so much time travel, but the idea of when you try and go faster than light, it breaks causality. So the universe fixes causality, and people get edited out of the universe
existing.
So the idea being that many, even whole civilizations, might have invented faster than light travel, but as soon as they go faster than light, everything about them is edited out of the universe, and everybody who ever remembered them, it kind of fixes the past history. It like kind of selects a one of the infinite numbers of history and kind of locks over to this other timeline where that thing didn't exist or died years before. So there's a few ways to get around this causality. There's another version in House of Suns as well, which is another universe where it's not Revelation Space universe, but it's another universe where there is no faster than light travel.
Yeah.
But then again, there's a different fix of how it gets around faster than light travel and things like that. If someone tries it anyway. But I really love this, that if you're too close to the machinery which tries to make someone break causality and go faster than the speed of light, or whatever, or go back in time, or whatever is going to break causality. If you're close enough to it, you'll remember how the universe used to be, but everybody else thinks you've gone crazy because you're just like, oh no, there was two of us in here and that one person disappeared. And everyone's like, no, what do you mean? You're the only person who was working on this project. Yeah. No, there was this other person.
Yeah, yeah. One of the technicians.
Was that also in Revelation Space, or was it both? There was a few different stories like that in this book.
Yeah, there was this one incident. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Skade.
Yeah, but there's another incident which is talked about, but I can't remember if it's in this book or a previous, or if another Revelation Space book. It might have been the prefect that's mentioned in. I can't remember exactly.
Maybe.
They're doing similar experiments in the prefect, trying to get messages back from.
No, but I remember it being in this one that on Nightshade now these incidents happened and the technician.
Oh, so it is in this one. Yeah, I couldn't remember because it was at the beginning of the book.
She kind of gets sucked in and like really compressed down.
But it happens. That's another time when it happened. Anyway, it's one of those horrific things where like. You know, when in those stories where someone goes back in time and changes everything, and you're the only one who remembers how it's like that kind of thing, but in the opposite way round. Like, you know, you haven't gone back in time and changed something. The universe has
changed around you.
Yeah, it's changed around. The whole universe has changed around you, and you're the only one. But it's like, this person was right here. Nope. And people just think you've gone crazy. Like, well, the experiment didn't work. And you're like, it did work, but this person disappears. Yeah. Like, no, the experiment didn't work, but you were close enough to the effect. All of those things where when you do... I mean, this is... Like, there's this thing that someone asked me about when they were talking about the episode 300 and the special episode 300. And someone said, hey, what you should do is talk about science fiction. And if you like hard science fiction or not hard science fiction, like do you want it to be really within the... Like, there's the rules of the universe, or do you want it to be more fantastic? And someone said, like, on one side is more hard science fiction, like Alistair Reynolds. On the other side is Peter F. Hamilton, where it's sort of like, oh, and there's gates and people can go faster than light. And, you know, there's all kinds of different crazy stuff that he does. I never really see it as a binary thing of being like hard science fiction, you know, not traveling faster than light, because Alistair Reynolds is playing with the rules. I mean, this is not like the conjoined drives and the ultra. Oh yeah, there's the ultras. We didn't even talk about them, where they steal the spaceships from. You get the ultras, the Demarcus, the conjoiners, and then the
humans.
Well, the humans are the Demarcus. Yeah, yeah. They're all humans, but different
hyper pigs.
The hyper pigs and stuff. But what he's doing is he's just taking the rules of the universe, but changing it so, like, he changes the rules of the universe within the universe.
Yeah, it fits in the time and the circumstances.
No, it's not that it just fits. Like, other people, like, will start off a... So if you just take, Star Trek, for example.
Yeah.
And the first Star Trek, they're on the Enterprise, and the Enterprise goes at warp speed. But the work of what warp speed isn't done within the space, within the text or within the movies or TV show itself.
No, it just happens.
It's just there, and it's the rules that are there. Which is fine. And it's that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's just one way of doing it, which means that it's only the Star Trek nerds who actually get down and go, well, in this episode, there were these crystals, which meant this and that, actually, you know, and they kind of plan it out, you know.
Why are you putting this kind of voice on?
That's my nerd voice. you will think you're fine. No, what was that one that we watched yesterday when it was the Animaniacs, where someone's going, oh, you saw this thing. Anyway, so the nerds, it's the nerds who work it out, which is, there's actually a fantastic sequence in Galaxy Quest where they actually want to find out how the spaceship works.
Yeah.
And instead of looking at the things on the spaceship to find out how the spaceship works, they just ask the nerds who follow along with the TV shows, like, well, how do you think this works? And they go, oh, well, we think this, and that actually turns out to be the retreat thing. So it's sort of like, does the work to explain the technology happen outside of the story, or is it like in Alistair Reynolds, all of the times that causality is broken, all of the things that happen is kind of discovered and explained within the book itself?
Yeah.
Like, when they do, and now we've got this inertial suppressant stuff, that's really well explored. You know, they go in here, and they look at this, and they get closer to the drive, and it makes them weird and stretch out, and then they come further away from it.
Yeah.
And they go across the solar system or Yellowstone system.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like they do a test run of the technology, and then go, right, and now when it's going to become really important for the story, we've built up the technology within the story.
Yeah.
Like, he does the science experiments in the story to get ready for when it's going to become, like, with the, you know, sending messages back from the future, causality breaking, and all of the other technologies which are used within the book are explored within the book.
Yeah.
It's not just like, oh, here's how technology works, or like, this is what's happening, this is the kind of ship, and it uses this, this, and this. It's like, no, over the course of these three novels, we're going to say, okay, this is what this is like, this is what the Melding Plague is, right? Let's explore the Melding Plague, and now let's, after we've explored the Melding Plague, or while exploring the Melding Plague, and how it works and what it does, and Chasm City is a lot more of this as well, you know, like the whole world is set up.
Yeah.
He's doing the work within the books. He's kind of getting into the universe and going, right, the universe exactly as we know it now, with all the rules that we know it now, with no fast and light travel and none of this and none of that, like, and then he gets in there and starts going into the rules of the universe, our current universe, with the wrench and with the screwdrivers and fiddling with it within the story. And by the end of it, you can be going faster than light, or, well, maybe not in this story, but you're breaking all the rules. So by the end of his books, you might as well be a Peter F. Hamilton book with wormholes here and brain transfers there and all that other kind of stuff. But it's happening within the book. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, what I think is also the way that especially Peter F. Hamilton and Alistair Reynolds, they know their universes and their rules so well that they can actually, like as the pattern jugglers, they juggle within the universe that they create.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I'm writing a book and, my head, this is like what it is. And then, oh, the story needs now this.
Yeah.
Oh, let's just put this in now. It just works.
No, but I mean...
In that specific situation, it just happened that this suddenly now works.
Yeah.
So it's not like
at the beginning of all the books. Everything is there at the beginning of all the books that you need.
That's what I'm saying. He knows these two authors really know what does... work and what doesn't work, and it's not suddenly like, oh, because I can need this now, or the story can need it now, or the development could now need this, let's put this in. No, it's like
it's already there, it's from the beginning of the book.
And I think this is what makes these stories so strong, and I don't really feel like this is hard science fiction, because hard science fiction for me is kind of more like, oh, let's say we are on Earth and use shuttle technology.
You mean like engineering science fiction?
Yeah, like human engineering, current like, abilities of human beings, no warp and no...
kind of like one of those Stephen Baxter, we've got to get to the moon in the next 40 days. How are we going to do it?
Exactly.
And then it's sort of like engineering.
Yeah, or like The Martian. Yeah, I mean, The Martian is a bit like... Yeah, but
even more
it's
hard.
More hard science fiction because this is actually within human... abilities and reach.
Yeah, one thing I really liked about, because we did a review of Judas and Chained, no, Pandora's Star and Judas and Chained by Peter F. Hamilton.
Yes.
And that's one of those stories, like when you say, oh, when you get to the end of the book, oh, we need this thing here. But at the start of that book, they're like, okay, wormholes. Right, we've established what wormholes, that's how the book opens with them going to Mars and
and
they're already there. And they're like, okay, well, what would be the best way to get things through wormholes efficiently and get through? Okay, railway. So we've got a wormhole and a train goes through and then we switch it to another place and a train goes through and the train keeps going through the same tracks, but then we're going to match the tracks up to these other things. And you're like, oh, that's really clever. So it's weird that it's in the future, but it's actually a train-based economy and train-based transport.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, okay, that's clever. And in my head, I was like, oh, that's clever. Until you get to like the last quarter of the second book and you're like, oh shit, that is like major, like, you know, with the Starflyer and stuff like that. You're just like, oh, right, that explains, like, all of this, you know, all of this time. And you're like, that was put in place literally in chapter two. Like, chapter one set up wormholes. Chapter two set up trains going through wormholes. And that pays off in, like the last five chapters of the book. And you're like,
it's
okay.
It's like a really nice arc.
Yeah, and it's like, that was there from chapter one and chapter two.
Yes.
The Starflyer was this thing that was happening in the background. And you're like, oh. Yeah. Trains and wormholes. You're like, oh, it was. You're like, oh, okay, you're too clever for me. But that can't happen. I mean, again, when you get to these long series of books, it's really difficult to put that much stuff in the start. And of course, with the Revelation Space, each individual book kind of starts with the rules that it needs.
Yes.
And then it tinkers with them. And then the next book can continue on with that.
And that's really, you're fine with it.
What do you mean?
I don't think like you miss like, oh, I would actually need more explanation.
No, but what I'm saying is that it's satisfying from a story level because in the first half of the book, like I said, sets up all of the rules until that second half of the book where you get the space chase and the space battles at the end, which would be the big payoff.
Yeah.
The space chase and only works because we've been doing it at a smaller level and exploring all of the technology within Resurgam. In some ways with the inhibitors and, you know, the Infinity for Nostalgia.
Yeah.
No, Nostalgia for Infinity.
Yeah.
Getting the names mixed up. And the other stuff...
And Nightshade, where lots of things happen.
Happening in Nightshade and in Yellowstone and all that kind of stuff that was going on. And we have the thing with the... What's Antoinette's ship called? I can't remember. That wasn't Nightshade, was it? Is that Nightshade?
Yeah, that is Nightshade.
That's Nightshade. Oh, yeah, no, I'm thinking the Mother Nest. The Mother Nest and Nightshade. And we, like you say, we're exploring the physics and we're exploring the technology, which is all set up for the second half of the book where it all plays out.
Hmm.
And that's why it's so satisfying, because all of those things that he's talking about is a lot of like, oh, okay, and now we're going to do this. And he doesn't need to break away from the explanations to explain anything there.
Hmm.
Because it's all logical, like all of those rules are explored already, and now we're just playing it out. Like the characters want this. This is at stake. The human race is at stake. This planet is at stake. This star or whatever's happening here. All of this stuff, and then it pays off. And yeah, it's just super satisfying in that way. So
it is very much, and also, and even the philosophical. Like thought behind the whole thing is when you get
thematically, you mean
to the end,
yeah,
and you see, oh, all right, it is all about kind of finding out about the truth, going to your paradise, to your ideal of this is actually what we all want. We want the place to go and the. And all our...
I know, it's also on the front of the cover of the book. The redemption arc. You go,
exactly.
Okay, there's lots of spaceships. Which one of them, like, where is the redemption coming from? And which one of them is the arc? And actually, at one point, they kind of go, oh, this one,
exactly.
I don't want to give it away. It's like, this one is the redemption arc. You're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But actually, the whole story is about redemption for Clavain. The whole story is about redemption for Ilya.
Yeah.
It is about those characters going, oh shit, we are both considered the bad guys in other people's stories.
Yes.
We need to
and
do
we
this.
We are the bad guys.
And this is, both of them could be considered the bad guys, but we also, both of them could be considered the heroes for what they're doing then. They're both working towards redemption. And again, that's what I really love at the end of this, that the bad guys at the end, who are, like, there's this space battle taking place, and you're like, oh, but this one's the main character, this one's the protagonist of the story. And you're like, oh, but this is the protagonist from that last story, who is also kind of protagonist.
And you can't really take, like, even Skade, even though she's very, like, very strict and, like, somehow weird, weirdly, like strong, like strong and violent character. Yeah. But on the other hand, you always feel like there's like the softness and
there's some humanity there left.
Exactly.
Yeah. My point being, though, that when normally when a big battle happens at the end of a movie, or a big battle happens at the end of a book, it's like, okay, bad guys against good guys, or whatever, this against that. Here, it's like, these people that you really want to succeed up against these other people that you really want to succeed. And you're like, no, I don't want them. I want them both to succeed. And I hope, you know, so it's one of those interesting payoffs for a book that this is being set up, and it's a long way coming, like all the way to the second half of the book. You're like, oh, okay. Immovable object meeting an unstoppable force. Like, okay, like where's this going to go? And who's going to have the upper hand? And it plays out so well because these are characters that by this time, we really want all of them to succeed, but they have opposite goals, and how that plays out at the end of the book is really good. So I think we've covered most stuff, and we've been going about an hour. So should we wrap it up?
I want to put in one more thing. Let me put in one more thing.
No, of course. Yeah. I'm just saying that. Let's aim towards the end of the podcast now.
I understand that, but let me put my I really like it how he puts in little quotes and references. Like I had one note in my audiobook app for the notes and stuff, and it was Skade saying. What was she saying?
Star Wars quote.
Yeah. Star Trek.
Star Trek, sorry.
Make it so, said Skade. And she said that, and it made me so much, like, grin there just hearing this. And, like, of course, the whole idea of the conjoiners is...
a bit bald-like, isn't it? Yeah.
Quite a big... Like, I mean, it is. It's called the Mother Nest, and the whole thing about the Borg. And I this is what I loved most about when I watched the Star Trek episodes with the Borg, is I really like this whole concept of this whole community of people, not people, but like they kind of, of course, in the Borg they get assimilated.
But this is the big fear within this one. That's what the Demarchists are going against, because they're like, the grasshoppers, they call them grasshoppers. I can't remember what they call them there.
Well, it's kind of what they do.
It's like, oh, they're going to come over here and they're going to just turn us all into conjoiners. And that's what happened to Clavain, and that's what happened to some others. It's like, no, you can't put these machines inside us and do this kind of stuff. And then people do it, and they're like, but it's so much better in here. But otherwise, but you've given up your humanity and all that kind of stuff.
No, I really like those little quotes. And what else did I write down? And
I have something to go along with that.
What is that?
Is that, as I said before, this is... Alistair Reynolds does this with quite a few of his books. He goes, right, now I'm going to do this story, and now I'm going to do this kind of story.
Like,
you go, and now I'm going to do the grand tour story where I'm going to visit Earth and the Moon and Venus and Mars. And, you know, it's a classic kind of science fiction form that he does. And then in Terminal... World, where he goes, and now I'm going to do steampunk, but it's also going to be my Mars novel. So all of the references that I want to make about all the other Mars things that have ever happened in other science fiction, I'm going to do my references here, and all the other stuff, you know, the actual history of Mars is going to do in here. And what he's doing in here, he's going, I'm going to do the space battle. This is my space battle military science fiction book that he's done. And he puts in quite a few references, like you say,
are you not looking?
No, I just brought up the Audible page.
It looked like you found a page with.
No,
the references.
I'm just saying that. But what I really like about it, that even within the book, one of the characters was watching a space battle, and he's like, "Oh, you know, it's in this way they actually get it wrong in the space dramas when they show space battle, because in the space dramas, this is with him in the book, he's like, what they never show lasers in space, because they say, well, you can't see lasers in space because there's nothing to reflect the lasers. So when people shoot lasers at each other in the space dramas, you don't see that." And he's like, well, actually, you do see the space lasers because there's always debris and smoke and other gases outgassing and stuff. So when the lasers go through, you do see the lasers going through. Which is funny because now when like people watching TV shows in space TV shows now go,
they say, but you
wouldn't see the laser because when a laser's shining through something which doesn't have anything to reflect it, you don't see lasers. Like when you do laser pointers, you see where the laser is against the wall. You see it with a point, but you don't see the beam unless there's some smoke. And in space, there's those smokes. You don't see the laser. So nerds watching science fiction. No, actually not like me, because I don't mind it when movies break the rules of science.
Yes.
Because that's storytelling. That's creating interesting things. You know, that's creating interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And, but he's doing the opposite way around. He's going, well, he's double actually-ing. You know, when you are, well, actually, I think you'll find that this happens. But he's doing a layer on top of that. He's going, well, actually, the people who say actually are actually wrong. And I am an astronomer and astrophysicist or whatever Alistair Reynolds used to be. But then he says, but what they do get right in the space adventures is that there is no sound in space. And that's what they do get right. Whereas actually we know now that in space adventures, they never get that right.
Yes. Rarely.
Rarely get it right. I think Firefly, they didn't have noise in space.
Yeah.
And the movie... Gravity didn't have noise from the outside. They had the noise from inside the
helmets.
The helmets.
Yeah.
And they had a soundtrack, an okay-ish soundtrack to go along with it. But they needed that soundtrack because otherwise it would have just been, you know, Sandra Bullock breathing for an hour and a half. And you're like, we need a bit more than just Sandra Bullock breathing for an hour and a half. So he is actually playing with the form of like kind of recognizing that, hey, what I'm doing now, hey guys, I'm going to do a space battle. Mm. So you've got some images in your head from space battles, from movies and from, or maybe from other books. You've got things in your head. I'm just going to say what you've got right and what you've got wrong in the, you know, like Alistair Reynolds is telling us what kind of images we should have in our head, basing them on the media that we now know, but he's doing it via someone in the 27th century thinking about the movies that he saw as a kid or the drama, the Netflix or whatever he watched in the 27th century. Okay.
Right.
Anything else you want to say? Or should we do the Audible app and then rate the book?
We should also say that if you want to read or consume this book, the audiobook, I think, is a really good way to go.
Yep.
The only complaint I have about it...
It's too long?
Well, that's not its fault. But what I don't really like, the abrupt changes between chapters. Sometimes it goes on and then...
Yeah,
like you're suddenly in a different part, and I think, what story am I now? Who am I with?
Yeah, because when you're reading it, you'll see the gap in the page between the two paragraphs, and you're like, and now scene change, but you don't get that.
In the audiobook, it's so quick.
But I told you about an audiobook that I listened to a few books ago, where the gap in between was too long, so suddenly it'll be like, and now like that. And I'll be like, it stopped, and I'll be getting my phone out, and then it would carry on again. And, you know, when I go to sleep, I set a sleep timer.
Yeah.
And sometimes it stops at the end of a sentence and just happens to stop at that point. Mm. And I'm like...
And then you wake up again.
Yeah, no, I don't wake up. Yeah. It's like, I'm waiting
and
for
And then this one is slightly
yeah,
opposite.
So there is
I think John Lee just makes it. It does such a good job with the voices. And you always recognize who you're with by just... for a second listening to who is talking, and you will be able to recognize the voices a lot. So I think, doing some advertisement for Audible is...
Okay, let's do it. Audible, audibletrial.com/SFBRP. You can get this book for free, although I would suggest probably starting off with Revelation Space if you want immediately before this. Chasm City if you want a kind of sideways, like Curry in this book, she was on Sky's Edge, and that's the story of Sky's Edge and a bit more stuff happening in Chasm City. Or if you want to go further back, go to The Prefect. Or if you want to go even further back, I think there's is it Galactic North, which is one of his story collections, which has Clavain's backstory, like his earlier stories and stuff, like even further back. So there's lots of different ways into this. I think Redemption Arc is a really good story, but I think it's a better follow-up to Redemption Arc than a standalone story, even though it probably could stand alone. There's too many references to things which you'd be like, oh, who are these guys again? Like, and yeah. Redemption Arc really sets up, because that is... Revelation Space is probably the best one. So I suggest, and it's a bit shorter as well. So Revelation Space, go for Revelation Space. You can get that book or 180,000 other audiobooks, any one of them for free. And if you sign up for a trial, you can continue getting one credit per month if you get the gold plan, or 2 credits a month, which I have. I've saved up 6 credits because it's been a while since I've not been getting through the audiobooks. And also this one was on one of your credits.
Yes.
So I've got some other books that I'm listening to. So and by doing that, it's really good. Both me and Juliana are a member of this. So we do recommend it, and we use it ourselves personally. And also by signing up for audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you can help support the podcast and the hosting fees and stuff like that, which isn't too much, but it's really the sponsorship money that I get from Audible is very, very handy for keeping this podcast going and paying for our...
Because we like to pay for our books.
Our books, yes. I get probably one or two, let's say 10 a week, I get people wanting to send me books for free and to do advanced reading copies and do reviews and stuff. And I turn every single one of them down. And to do that, yes, it's handy to have a little bit of support for the podcast from the listeners rather than the publishers, because I am not anybody's...
puppet.
Publishers. I'm nobody's bitch but you listeners, or something. Anyway... SFBRP, you can support it. And also, if you want to check out what I rated other books by Alistair Reynolds, the best thing to do is to go to sfbrp.com and click on the episode lists link there, and it takes you to a page, and you can click and sort by author and see all the other books that I've reviewed by him. I think Ian M. Banks I've reviewed more books by, and then it's Alistair Reynolds. So, two questions. Juliana, would you continue on with this series? Do you want to see what happens on the planet, on the Pattern Juggler world?
Yeah, for sure.
When they arrive at the end of the book?
Yes.
Absolution Gap, we can do it.
Let's do it.
I'm going to wait for you to finish it, and then I will start it, because it takes... Because we totally get out of sync when we try and read books at the same
because
time.
Because your lifestyle lets you listen to it a lot more. Because
I just cruise through these books.
You also flying a lot.
But we'll get to it. And then I think then the only one... I'll do Alistair Reynolds' latest book, which he released last year.
Yeah.
And then I might do The Galactic North. I might be getting that mixed up. There's a short story collection of his, which I actually have as a paper book.
Somewhere in a box.
In the other apartment.
Oh, okay.
It's actually, I think, on the... Oh, no, I think I brought it with me here. Anyway, it'll be in a box downstairs in the new apartment, which I do have, but I might just get it as an ebook because I can't be bothered to have paper books. But I'll give you a paper book to you, and if you want to read some of those stories...
Why do you think I would prefer to read a paper book?
I'm just saying, it can just sit beside your bed.
Yes.
If you want it that way.
Okay.
Or if you want it an ebook and have it on your iPad.
I will see.
We'll see how it goes.
I'm currently just started reading Saga.
No, let's move on to... The second thing was the rating of this. We'll talk about what we're going to get to next. Okay. So if you were to rate this book, how would you rate it out of 5 stars?
Well, I gave it 4 stars on Goodreads.
Yeah.
Because... I don't know. There were some bits where I thought it was a bit it was very, very complex in some points, and sometimes a bit too much politics. I know it's weird, but there were a few bits that were a bit too heavy for me.
What, with Thorn?
With the hot and stuff. But in total, I really had a lot of fun, and I would give it 4.5.
Yeah.
I can't on Goodreads.
Oh, you can't on Goodreads, but now you would give it 4.5 stars.
In between the two of us, I said I would give it 4.5 stars.
What do you mean between the two of us?
Yeah, well, I can't do it on
Oh, okay. SFBRP, we can give fractional stars. Goodreads, you can't.
Exactly.
Okay, see what I mean. I would agree. I think this is a 4.5 star book. I do think... I think that if I'd have read it straight through, I'd have finished Redemption, if I'd have finished Revelation Space or Chasm City, whichever one you want to consider the previous book to this, because Audible thinks this is the third book in the series. So it goes Revelation Space, Chasm City, then this book.
Oh, okay.
I think but it follows on from both books. It's one of those weird things that you can read those three. This could come after either of those books.
Okay, yeah.
this has to be read after at least one of those books.
Yes.
So you can read those first two in any order, and then this third book. Anyway, what I'm saying is that alongside those books, if I hadn't have taken literally over a year to read this, I think I'd have enjoyed it more. But I still, even then, I don't think it would be a 5-star book.
Yeah.
There are things in this book where I'm like, okay, this isn't, I'm not completely convinced by this.
Yeah.
I understand why it's in the book. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
But it's not, it doesn't, it's sort of like some parts of the rest of this book are so good. They are pure 5-star books that the bits that let it down.
Yeah.
Like, in contrast, it actually lets it down more. Whereas something like Chasm City, it's all kind of equal, but all not 5 stars.
Yeah.
You understand?
But, for example, The Prefect for me was totally just a 5-star book.
Yeah.
Because it was just fun and the story was fun. The characters were really good fun. The worlds were even more fun.
Yeah.
And that whole thing about going to solve things... I like that bit better.
Yeah, because you love the procedural stuff.
Yes.
As well.
But this one, I had fun. I really enjoyed the way he lined out the characters, the way he took the story, how... I'm not so much a fan of strategic stuff. Like, I don't play chess and stuff. But...
And you think this is playing chess a bit too much?
Yeah, it is a bit too much playing chess. But on the...
Isn't that what it says on Wikipedia at the start?
Does it?
No, I can't remember. Something, is it? Does it say chess? No. It might have been on something else.
Yeah, but it reminds me a little bit about this.
Like, but they set up the rules and then they move the pieces around. The first half of the book explains the rules of the game, says what's at stake, says who the different characters are.
Yeah, and
the second
half
is this three-way chess match.
Yeah, and in the end, it turns out who actually played it, and it were the pattern jugglers.
There's different ways to interpret it. Let's read the third book, and we'll see how shit really goes down. And it's amazing. It was one of those things that at getting to the end of that third book.
Mm.
Which I've actually read twice now. This is the second time through. But when I get to Absolution Gap, that'll be the third time I've read it.
Okay.
It starts off in this way, which is so crazy, and ends in a way which is weirdly mind-blowing, but in a way which it kind of takes three books to build up to it. And at the end, it broke my brain. I was like, oh, so this thing that happened... I'm not going to give it away, because you won't see it coming. And when it does come... Anyway, I don't want to give it too much away.
Exactly. But just leave it. I will.
But it's one of the. But it is kind of brain breaking in the quantum kind of like universe kind of way. Anyway, so I don't want to get into it. Yeah, I'm going to give it 4.5 stars, not 5.5. 4.5 stars as well, which means it's the same level as all these other books, which I think are really great. Let me just quickly have a look here. I gave Revelation Space 4.5, Terminal World 4.5, House of Sunstone. Yeah. Alistair Reynolds seems to be about a 4 to 4.5. Oh, we gave you The Prefect. I gave it 4.5, but you gave it 5 stars. So that got 4.75 stars. Okay, that's it, I think. So, yes, now we can say what's coming up next. We realised that we're only halfway through Saga, because we reviewed Saga Volumes 1 and 2, the comic by... Who is it? Brian K. Vaughan? Is it? Brian?
Fiona
Staples is the artist. But who's the
Brian
author?
Something.
Yeah, it is Brian K. Vaughan, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway... We read and reviewed, and we talked about volumes 1 and 2.
Yes.
We then
it's
read
a comic.
A comic. Right. Yeah, comics volume 1 and 2.
Yeah.
But then I think there was a pause afterward, and there was a gap. So then we were like, oh, there's nothing.
Yeah, and they kept publishing the individual issues, and
but there was a gap at one point, so we caught up with until the gap.
Oh yeah, there was this. Wasn't that like a strike of?
No.
That was something different.
I think there was just a gap.
No, okay.
Anyways, there was a gap there, and then we read volume 3. Didn't talk about it, but we realized that they've published volume 6 now or something that. So we realized we've only talked about the first two volumes of that. So we're gonna catch up. We're gonna get up to volume 6 and then talk about it so far. I don't know how long it's meant to be or when the story will go through, but that's some fun fantasy space opera kind of stuff going on there. So we'll talk about that once we are both caught up. Juliana's got an iPad Pro, a big one.
Oh, so good.
For comics, they look amazing.
Amazing.
I'll be reading it on my iPad Mini, but it's still got the Retina screen, so it's good.
I started just from the beginning again to get back.
Of course. I'm going to do the same thing.
And it was good.
Yeah.
I immediately started smiling again as if I have never read it before.
I'm still only I'm halfway through the follow-up to The Sparrow by Mary Odoria Russell, which I'll get to as well. And I've got some other fun books that I want to read as well. There's people have been talking on Goodreads about a book which is called The Long Trip to Somewhere Dark and... No, what was
it
called?
The Long Journey to an Angry Planet?
The Long... Let me look at my notifications. It's in Books I Would Like to See Reviewed thread on Goodreads, the SFBRP listener group here.
The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
And it's been recommended by quite a few people, so I will get that one.
And you said
one.
It's not on Audible Germany. It actually is available.
We'll see how it goes. But didn't someone say the audiobook isn't so good, or did they say it is good? Can't remember.
I think they talked about a different book.
Okay.
I started listening to another book that was recommended called Pavan. Pavan by Keith.
That's been recommended to me a few times before as well.
Pavan. By Keith Roberts.
Pavane.
Maybe it's Pavane. I would say it's Pavan, but...
I know it's a musical form.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's Pavane. I've heard it say Pavane.
Well, in German, Pavane, it's...
Pavan. Anyway, you're doing that, are you? You're going to listen to that?
I started listening to it.
Okay. Cool.
It's also not so long, I think.
Oh, yeah, because you had to spend all your credits, didn't you? You were building up and you... I think that's the thing with Audible. Once you get over 12 credits, you just don't get any more. They're just like, well, you're not listening or whatever it is. And you'd been we've been not doing so many audiobooks. Right, yeah. I think that's it. That we said what we were going to read. And I said about 19 minutes ago that we should aim towards the end. And now we've reached it.
Yes.
Another long episode. And the next episode that we do together, we should aim to finish up before an hour.
Yeah,
I should
talk a bit less.
I think you should talk quicker.
What?
I talk really quickly. People complain about how quickly I talk. If you could talk at the same speed as me, we could shave about 5 minutes of this podcast.
I think I talk in a very good way and people understand and can follow along.
Okay, let's get a photo of the two of us.
All right.
And we'll do this thing. So thanks a lot for listening. Oh, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge. Email me, luke@juggler.net. Become my friend and Julianne's friend on goodreads.com. And so we can see what you think about this same book. Someone commented on my review and said, this is probably one of my all-time favorite science fiction books. And you know what? Probably one of my all-time favorite, but it's part of a collection. Yeah, it's part of one of my all-time favorite series. So
yes.
I think that's probably why I enjoy it so much as well. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.